This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, senior writer for the Philadelphia Daily News, filling in for Terry Gross. By one estimate, $800 million in U.S. banking deposits are sitting in tax-exempt accounts registered in the Cayman Islands in the Caribbean. My guest, William Britton Catlin, explores the use of offshore tax shelters and shell corporations in his new book, Offshore: The Dark Side of the Global Economy. The Cayman Islands are one of many offshore jurisdictions around the world whose laws allow companies and people to set up accounts and corporate subsidiaries that are free from taxation and regulatory scrutiny. That kind of secrecy has served as a cover for fraud and money laundering for decades. And though reforms are in the works, offshore tax shelters are still being used by almost every major company in the world. William Britton Catlin is a producer for the BBC. He said he got interested in the offshore economy when he was working as an investigator for Kroll Associates, an international security firm.
Kroll is a private investigations company, and I worked for their London office. And I was working there in the kind of boom period of the economy at the end of the 1990s. And I would be working for clients who were involved in deals with counterparties in Russia, American clients who'd be doing business in Russia or South Africa or Israel or anywhere like that. And it would very soon become apparent that the people you were looking at, their business that you were looking at, would be held together at the end, the bottom, by an offshore company. And this happened time and time again. It seemed to me that this was absolutely key to the way that modern business was actually being done on the ground. I would encounter these offshore companies all the time, and they would be frustrating as an investigator because you couldn't get behind them because of the secrecy aspect. And at the same time, they were quite seductive, these entities, these offshore entities, because there was a kind of mystique around them. There they were. And you couldn't do anything about them. They kind of stood apart from the normal realm of life.
Now, as you studied the offshore world, your book deals in large part with the Cayman Islands, which a lot of people know is one of the most famous offshore tax havens. Give us a sense of how this island in the Caribbean became a tax haven. What kind of transformation it underwent?
It underwent an absolutely total transformation. I mean, here you had an island where they fished for turtles in the sea. They made fishing nets. And really, that was about it. And the menfolk used to work on the oil tankers taking up oil across to North America. Now, imagine that. That was a small, pretty undeveloped country only about less than 50 years ago. And now it's the fifth largest financial center in the world, with all the major banks, all the major financial institutions there, and all the main corporations, all the American multinationals, having subsidiaries there. I mean, that's a huge change.
So what drove the transformation of the Cayman Islands into a tax haven?
Some smart lawyers who'd been around in the area, they'd made a fortune in Bahamas, turning that into a tax haven, saw Cayman as a place that was ripe to turn into another tax haven. So they came there and they came to the government and they said, look, we can make you a lot of money if you let us write the laws that's going to enable us to turn this island into a tax haven. So what does that mean? What sort of laws? Well, that means the laws to register offshore corporations, to register trusts, to register offshore banks. A whole raft of legislation was kind of grafted onto the Cayman Islands from these lawyers who'd had experience of doing it in places like Bahamas, like I said. And the Cayman Islands just happened to be ready and ripe for it.
Well, let's look at how these offshore havens, like the Cayman Islands, actually work and how multinational companies operate there. You have described going to the Cayman Islands to look at the corporate registry. Now, people in the United States, reporters, investigators, are used to being able to figure out who owns a corporation. There are registries with real information. What do you find in the Caymans when you go to look for information about a corporation?
Well, it's an interesting story. You turn up at a sort of government office called the registry for the island, where everyone's registered, all the people who live there, births and deaths and marriages. And there's also a little office where all the companies are registered. In Cayman, companies are like people. There's more companies than there are people anyway. And their companies are very important to them. They bring in an enormous amount of revenue. So you go in and you to the company registry office. And your hopes are high. You think, here I am. I'm going to find out about some Cayman company. And you fill in your form with the name of the company. You hand over your 50 Cayman dollars. Put the name of the company in, maybe Bronco Investments Limited, something like that. And you wait, and you see some people scurrying around in the background, picking out things out of files. Then you get handed a piece of paper, and it tells you really no more than you went in with the first place. It tells you the name of the company, the date it was set up, where the registered office is, and that's it. And also whether the company is active or whether it's been closed down. And that's all the information you get.
Do companies there even have an office, or are many simply a mail drop?
They don't have an office at all. They register with law firms. In the old days, each and every company that was registered at a law firm would have the old brass plaque up outside the front door of the law office. There would be Bronco Investments Limited. These days, because there are so many companies in Cayman, it's all computerized. You go into the lobby of the law firm, there's a computer screen, it's got the letters A through to Z, and you touch on the letter you want to check companies under, and up come 100 companies on the letter C, which is only like a small proportion of all the companies beginning with C.
So that's what a Cayman company is. It's literally an electronic listing in a law firm.
It's an electronic listing in a law firm, and you can't get any further than that.
Now, you describe how multinational corporations use offshore networks of interlocking companies, many of them housed in offshore havens, to minimize their taxes and maximize their profits. Give us an example of how this works. You for example, cite British Petroleum, and it has an associated company called Cayman 97. How does it use that company to maximize its profits?
Yeah, I mean, BP is one of the world's largest oil companies, exploration and production of oil. Now, it happens to have a lot of companies offshore, one of which is a company called Cayman's 97. Now, this company will hold interests in parts of the BP empire across the world. For example, oil rigs in off the coast of Nigeria, for example, or pipelines running through Russia. It will hold interest in those. It will hold interests in perhaps in parts of the business in Europe as well. But the point is that this offshore company is the place where all the profits from those businesses on the ground in Russia, in Nigeria, in Europe, they all accrue back to this one offshore company. The idea is that you're keeping the money away from the onshore world of nation states, as I like to call it. You're drawing it away, you're pooling it away and taking it into this offshore company. You're bringing it all together. You're accumulating all your capital into one place where you're allowed to do it and where there won't be people prying on you, where you don't have to release any information, where you don't have to release any accounts. You're pulling all this money together. We're talking about millions, hundreds of millions here. Now, when you have this money in this nice offshore pot, you can, well, you're not paying any tax on it by keeping it in Cayman. The objective for any company that's working offshore and onshore in the way I've described is that you produce your product, you manufacture your product, you distribute your product in a country, wherever it is across the world. But all the financial capital aspects of that, all the profit side of that, has to be taken back to the offshore corporation and preserved there, because then no one can touch it.
No one made heavier use of the Cayman Islands than Enron. Don't try and take us through all the details of Enron's machinations, but is there anything about their experience in particular that tells us that reveals something about Cayman's role in the international economy?
Yeah, I mean, Enron is a textbook example. I mean, there in Cayman, they had 700 subsidiaries in Cayman and several hundred others in other tax havens across the world. Now, there were two things going on here. One of those, the main reasons for all these offshore tax haven incorporations was for tax. I mean, between 1996 and 2000, Enron was making billions and had only paid $17 million in those 4 years of tax. So these offshore companies were integral to how Enron structured itself across the world so that it paid the least tax. That's for tax reasons. And it was not the only company in that period to be paying that small amount of tax on the profits it was making. Now, what was going on at Enron, and this has happened in other companies like Global Crossing, for example, was that the offshore companies were set up to hide the losses of business, essentially. Business was going wrong. Enron was not the wonderfully valuable company that the public saw, really. What was behind the wonderfully high share price up in the late 90s was a company that was losing money big time on some really bad investments that it made. So what they did at Enron was to incorporate companies in Cayman in which to hide the losses that they were making. I mean, it's quite complicated because what they were doing was setting up companies to act as an insurance against the losses that they were making. So they were kind of spreading their risk into these offshore companies. Now, typically, if this was a legitimate operation, you'd have a third party who would take the risk, a third party who would hedge against any potential losses that you made or that you would make. In Enron's case, these were its own companies that it was setting up offshore. Now, the flexibility and freedom and secrecy that Cayman allowed Enron in the setting up of these companies to hide the losses, which it shouldn't have been doing, I mean, that was against the law. It was crossing the line of accounting legitimacy there. Only Cayman could give them that kind of freedom. Well, and other tax havens, but let's just say Cayman as the representative example here. And it's these offshore subsidiaries that in the end, they brought about the collapse. These were the secret parts of the Enron empire, which had been set up to kind of get Enron out of its troubles. But it caught up with them, and they ended up causing Enron to implode.
My guest is William Britton Catlin. His book is Offshore, The Dark Side of the Global Economy. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're speaking with William Britton Catlin. His book is Offshore, The Dark Side of the Global Economy. In the 1990s, several Western nations and some international economic institutions made noises about cracking down on the use of offshore tax havens. What was happening?
Well, the world in the 1990s was alight with capital being suddenly liberated from the shackles that it had been held in, for example, in Russia and other parts of the Soviet bloc, and capital was flowing all over the world like it had never done, before. And a lot of this money was going into Russia. Russia was going to be the great revolution, turning a backward socialist bloc country into a new, beautiful market economy. So there was a lot of money flowing around, but a lot of this investment in Russia from the IMF and from Western corporations, all this money going into Russia, as soon as it was getting there, the Russians themselves were taking it out. They were taking it off to offshore tax havens. Now, what happened was, to cut a long story short, that this money that was coming out of Russia was essentially being asset-stripped. The oligarchs were taking the money out, shoving it into their offshore companies. You needed to bank this money somewhere. Now, the best place to bank dirty money is in the most respectable banks that you can find. And this is what happened with a lot of Russian dirty money, is it found itself in American bank accounts in America. Now, when that came out with the Bank of New York, where it was discovered that millions of dollars of money had come from all sorts of questionable sources in Russia and was in American bank accounts. People got pretty alarmed about what had happened with this great explosion of capital across the world.
And they began cracking down on offshore tax havens?
Well, I guess what they saw was the dark side of the global financial system. The global financial system was hailed in the 90s as this great mechanism by which capital from one part of the world could go off to another part of the world, and foreign investment could be made, and you know the whole world would trundle along in a fluid liberal market economy kind of way. Now, when you discover that, in fact, a lot of this money is being a lot of this money is dirty money from mafia money or money that's come out from asset stripping institutions in Russia, for example. In other words, it's money that has been made illegitimately. When you discover that this money is in a bank account in New York and it's on your shores, you kind of see that this system, this international financial system, has gone wrong. Not only that, what was happening in Russia, the economy collapsed, and before that, the economy had collapsed in Asia, and before that, in Latin America. And what the IMF found at each and every turn was that offshore tax havens and offshore banks had been responsible for covering up the huge debts that these countries had. These countries had spent beyond their means. Money was pouring in from Western banks to build up these emerging market economies. And there was a bubble. And when things started to go wrong, the losses become self-evident. And the losses were parked away in offshore tax havens. No one knew they were there. So when it was suddenly revealed that all this debt to these offshore banks, then economies fall apart. So what I'm saying is that this global financial system at the end of the 90s was almost tripping itself up with these offshore networks, which were hiding the way that money was really being worked across the global economy. It wasn't so fluid and so liquid and so transparent as perhaps the people who were really pushing for global capitalism at the time had thought.
So in June of 2000, what was then the G7 generated, in effect, a list of 15 money laundering havens, which they wanted to crack down on. And then in the wake of the September 11th attacks in 2001, there was enormous concern with international terrorism and the way it could use banking secrecy to hide its the financing of its own activities. When all of this happened, what was the effect on the Cayman Islands? Was the party over?
Yeah, they thought it was over. It was a really very poor time for them. And I was over there in 2003, and they were really getting worried because they had the effect of the blacklists of 2000, as you said, where they were basically told to clear up all the G8 countries weren't going to do business with them anymore, effectively making them ostracized in the global economy, which would have been pretty devastating. And then, of course, the focus following 9/11, when the focus was on tracking down terrorist financing, and obviously offshore jurisdictions became the focus in that. There were other measures as well that were European specific about Cayman, because it's a British dependent territory, having to release information about savers, about the financial information of people from the European Union who were saving money in the Cayman Islands. The Cayman authorities were going to have to give up that information to tax authorities in Europe. So you can see the whole pack of cards that they'd built up around their tax haven business looked as though it was going to fall down. So they... I think, by and large, it wasn't just Cayman, though. And I suppose this is where it, this was happening to all the offshore jurisdictions. They all had to kind of be much more careful about who they were doing business with, the transparency of corporations, the governance. There was a lot of kind of know your customer. It's more people's attitude to offshore tax havens that's changed rather than what's changed in reality. I think... corporations and wealthy people are going to be less kind of keen to extol the virtues of offshore this and offshore that in these days. It's more of a kind of language thing. Sure, they've actually had to open their books to tax investigators in Cayman more than they've ever had to before. Yes, money has gone off. It's gone off to places like Singapore and Hong Kong and the Bahamas. Cayman is a UK-dependent territory. It's, but in that sense, part of the European Union, weirdly. So if you send your money off to somewhere outside the European Union, which is what's been happening in Cayman, you can get round it. You can keep the same kind of secrecy again. And the offshore world is like that. It's a mutating, changing world. Sometimes you have places where there's a lot of surveillance, a lot of investigation of the bad things that are going on there with capital. Other places are left alone. And there's a lot of these places around. There's like 73 tax havens.
Well, William Britton Catlin, thanks so much for spending that time with us.
Thank you very much indeed. I enjoyed it.
Writer and BBC producer William Britton Catlin. His new book is Offshore, The Dark Side of the Global Economy. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Fresh Air.